Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
All right, guys, we are back in the saddle talking about a lot of different things going on in the world of golf and this week's major. Before we get going, I want to point out a couple things to you guys, especially in our pro shop. If you guys are familiar with our pro shop, you know we've worked with Holderness and Born since 2016, actually, for several distinct reasons. They're a small shop, just like us, and we like working with like-minded folks. Their products put a modern fit and twist on classic style, which is what we like to think we do with our content here at No Laying Up. And the quality of the apparel is unmatched. You'll see if you go to our pro shop, choose shop by collection and go into the Holderness and Born section, you'll see all the different products of theirs that we offer. Especially, we wore this stuff out in Ireland, man, especially the new sweatshirts we've added. They are easily my favorite thing we've ever done in the pro shop. So if you're ever shopping anywhere, make sure to look for Holderness and Born on the tags, especially if you're shopping for merchandise at clubs or if you'd like to see your club's logo on some classically designed apparel. We couldn't recommend this stuff high enough. So either check them out in our store or check them out wherever you're shopping for golf clothes. And without further delay, let's start the pod. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We're just overdue for a catch-up episode. We've been in a lot of places, a lot of different locations.
A lot of ins, a lot of outs.
The five of us.
A lot of what have yous.
The four of us and Jax haven't been together since we all departed from Ireland a couple weeks ago. We got a lot to catch up on, and it's a major week, so we took some voicemails and got a lot of topics to discover. So, a few programming notes to start it off. Why don't you kind of break us down on all we've got sitting in our editing queue?
Yeah, right now. Well, first of all, Chris, so good to be here with you again. Back in the Kill House. Randy, always good to see you.
Thanks, guys.
You're wearing that shirt that you got from LaHinch that I lobbied for you to not get, but you keep wearing it, so I'm happy it makes you happy.
I've gotten compliments on this shirt.
From who?
Your mom?
From baristas.
Various baristas around town. Programming notes. So hopefully, I'm hoping to be grounded for a little while, get in the editing bay. We have Tour Saw Season 3. We're in production of that one, I'll say. We now have Tour Saw Season 4 in the can from Ireland. Season 3 is from California. I think we've mentioned that one a couple times. We got a Wild World of Golf in the can from Sweetens Cove with Zach Blair. People could probably, I was going to save that as a surprise. People could probably put that two and two together. On that one, we just got back, big guy, from filming another episode of the variously acclaimed series Strapped out in the biggest little city in the world, Reno. You want to tell the people about that a little bit?
It was fantastic. All Reno, no Tahoe.
We dipped our toe in
it. We actually did go down to the lake for an afternoon. It was fantastic. Great people, great golf. I think hopefully... We felt it was probably our best one yet. So
I think so. I hope so.
Not to take away from any of the other ones, but when you have that feeling leaving the city on a red eye, which was brutal, it's always a good feeling.
Yeah, so we got a lot to work on.
We do.
I think there's more stuff that we're not even remembering.
But well, a lot of
you guys are going back on the road next week.
That's right. We're going out to Colonial for the Charles Schwab Challenge. We mentioned that on the podcast last week with Mike Kaiser. If you missed that one, please do check that one out. We got a bunch of stuff coming out next week related to the Schwab Challenge. Again, still needs to get through the editing bay in our queue this week. And as well, people ask about the podcast too. So we have recorded the Season 3 Tourist Sauce podcast, the California one. We were planning just to release that one around the launch of the video series. Season 4, the Ireland one, I think we're going to try to release sooner than that. We just need to all be back together to actually sit down and record it. But I know a lot of people are still planning trips to Ireland this year, and those videos are going to be out much later. So we want to kind of give people at least a taste of and some feedback of what that trip was like. And it was, I don't know, similar to the Strap one you just mentioned, maybe our best one yet. So
Ireland was, there were a lot of firsts on the Ireland trip, which I don't want to give too many of those firsts away because I think they're going to be good hashtag content. But yeah, it was great. Great people. I mean, all the things you'd expect from Ireland, right? It was great people, great Guinness. It was great Lynx golf. It was windy roads that we didn't have to drive on, thankfully. It was, I think a very, hopefully very traditional Irish golf experience.
So yeah, so we got a lot to look forward to. Just give us a little bit of time to get editing on that, and the longer we talk about it, the less time we're spending editing it. So let's move right into some topics. We're going to talk a bit about the AT&T Byron Nelson that just was this past weekend, and preview the PGA Championship as best we can. I think there's not a ton to say about the PGA, but we got a couple questions about it, and we can tackle those. So why don't we roll right into our first question.
Hey, guys. This is John in Dallas, Texas. Big fan. I just wanted to see what you guys thought of Trinity Forest this past week at the Byron Nelson. Obviously, played a lot softer than it should play, but I just want to get your thoughts on the course. I don't know if you played it or not in the past in firm and fast conditions, but also don't know if you guys have gotten to check out Dallas Golf at all, and you know, just want to see what the odds were on maybe seeing a strapped season in DFW. A lot of good golf down here, and would love to see some good content on that. So hope you guys have a good one. See ya.
Love you guys. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks, man.
Well, you know, it was real. It was a real thrill when we were there in January to see Big Randy got to travel with the C-suite, and he actually got to go out and play nine holes at the private club that is Trinity Forest. Randy, what did you think of the golf course?
Yeah, it was really cool. Doesn't feel like you're close to a major metropolitan area.
It's not close to a major metropolitan area. Well, it's pretty far out there.
I mean, relatively speaking, I guess.
Yeah.
No, it was cool. I think the time we played it, it would classify as rather firm and fast. It brought in all types of different shots and possible shots. The tournaments, though, I guess leading into the point of the call, have left a lot to be desired. And, you know, some of that's Mother Nature. Some of that might be the course setup. I don't know. But something's missing. So, do you guys think that's fair? What do you think?
For sure. I think that's very fair. I saw a lot of tweets this week about, like, this course sucks. Like, I can promise you, guarantee you, that this course does not suck. I think, like you mentioned, they got pretty much the worst possible scenario this year. I mean, last year, it was like 100 degrees, smoking hot, and there's no shade out there. It was just like it was a bad experience for most people on the ground. This year, they get hit with cold weather, rain, and then like Sunday rolls around and there's no wind. So it played very, very easy in relation to par. I will first give a bit of a disclaimer in that this has got to be the hardest golf course to present on TV, with the width of the fairways and the dramatic elevation changes in the hills that are in the fairway. It's just hard to see where some of the balls land. That said, I don't think that there was a very good job or attempt done at explaining the golf course. There's, you know, so much when you watch TV, players will hit a tee shot and it's, is it going to miss the bunker? Oh, he's just fine there. And they, no matter, like, there's almost every tee shot at Trinity Forest is just fine. Like, they almost all find the fairway, but there's no attempt to explain, like, why the left side of the fairway is better than the right side of the fairway. Now, part of the reason why that's not a big deal when it's this soft is guys can land it next to pins. You know, when it's this soft, no matter what angle, the angles just stop mattering that much. So it's a combination of a lot of things. I think there's a lot to be desired. I think they could have really made the pins a lot tougher when it got soft. They did not seem to do that. I only really watched Sunday, to be honest. But a lot of things were working against them, and you're right, it just doesn't add up. It's not perfect, and it kind of goes back to something we've always talked about. We love playing, like, wide golf courses, width and angles and all that, but I'm not sure how great that is for tournament golf at the highest level.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the day that we played it, it was super firm. It was super windy, and I was holding on for dear life.
Right.
It was so fun. I loved it, but it was brutally difficult. And it's super hard. You have to hit a great shot to get it close to the pin. And like you said, this is not a stinky golf course. Right. It's a really, really good, really cool golf course that I'm dying to go see again. But
however.
No, I've come around more than anything on the fact that just because of the world we live in, and we can get into a couple of the reasons in a minute, but I mean, there are good tournament PGA Tour golf courses, and there are good, you know, kind of everyday public or private or, you know, whatever.
Members.
Everyday golf courses. And those two things are a lot different. And I think we saw that at, you know, kind of tournament course versus everyday course, even as recently as Quail Hollow, where, you know, we were watching it on TV, and like, I have never had a huge itch to go play Quail Hollow, but watching tour players play it, I was like, man, this is a good golf course to watch. And it really separates, you know, who's playing well versus who's playing poorly. And I think hopefully we'll see a lot of that at Bethpage this week as well, where it's a big kind of thick, rough, all of that stuff that is the opposite of what I want to do on an everyday basis. But it does seem to produce good tournaments. I mean, I know we were kind of talking beforehand, and that's kind of what Bellerive did a little bit last year, where, again, that was a course that I'm like, I've never had an itch to go play there, but it turned into a good tournament. And I think that we just, because the ball goes too far, because it's impossible to control the weather, because of all these things, like, you're just kind of left with this scenario where those are the courses that are going to have to, you know, produce the big championships and all of those things. And so Trinity Forest, it's an awesome experiment, and it's a good, I think if they had gotten good weather, this would be a totally different conversation. But there's also some things you hear about, you know, maybe they didn't make the surrounds fast enough. Maybe they didn't do all these things, because I think they're so gun shy, and they, I think probably the PGA Tour and the tournament, maybe to a lesser extent, I think they're so gun shy about turning people off completely to this golf course that they don't want to push it to the nth degree, because they don't want to lose, you know, they don't want guys going to the media center and blasting it and then, you know, getting an even a worse field next year than they had this year and blah, blah, blah. So I think there's a bunch of reasons, but it's kind of a unfortunate situation.
Along those lines, I thought it was interesting. Last year's winning score was 23 under, the same as this year's. And like you said, last year it was 100 degrees. Like, if there was ever a time where the course could have been just
right,
dead dry and firm and fast, and obviously the word last year was they overwatered it and really neutered the course a little bit.
They moved some tees up to like eliminate some centerline bunker. It kind of defeated some of the design purposes of it, because they were afraid of some like blowback from players really on it.
So I guess personally this year I was looking forward to seeing how they adjusted the course setup, and you know, obviously the weather neutralized all that, and it just dumped rain and made everything soft. So I guess give them another chance next year, but it seems like if they're going to have a tournament at a course like this, it doesn't make sense to try to make everyone happy.
Right.
Like either put it at a course like this and lean into it, or take it somewhere else where, like Firestone or Bethpage, or you know, a 7,700 yard traditional setup.
I think what sucks about this too is this tournament feels, from the outside looking in, I've never actually been to it, but it feels like it's got a bit of an identity crisis as well on the PGA Tour. I think that it's weird. You see events like Jack's event and Arnold's event and Tiger's event and all these things getting kind of like elevated status. And I think Brendan Porath was talking about this recently on his podcast. And it's just weird that the Byron Nelson has fallen into this kind of like no man's land where it doesn't, you know, it for so long at the TPC, it didn't have a great golf course. Didn't have a great field. It didn't, like, I know it does a lot for charity and there's a ton of aspects there, but it's just, yeah, it's tough that, you know, you kind of thought that maybe this Trinity Forest and kind of like weird, interesting architecture could kind of become its identity. But if that turns against them here, I don't know, it's kind of makes a bad situation worse.
Well, I think they were on the right track last year. I think it was even PGA Tour videos. They had Jeff Ogilvy doing the voiceover.
Tournament videos.
Yeah. Ogilvy was doing the voiceover explaining like the strategy.
Yeah, those were awesome.
And so often, I don't know if I don't even know for sure which networks are better doing this than others, but we see that overhead graphic of like, here's where so-and-so's ball is, here's where the other one is, and here's their distance to the pin. And on golf courses that are pretty narrow, that doesn't really add a lot to me. But if there's ever a golf course to do this at, it's like, show where Sun Kang's drive is and where's, like, I'm watching it. I've been there to these holes, and I still can't, like, picture what they're looking at or what the factors are they actually have to think about going into these shots. And they do have to go through that more than maybe any other course on the PGA Tour. They didn't really deliver on that. And I know that's a different kind of challenge. And when you're moving around week to week, it's really hard to, you know, really flip around the things that you do. But I think that presentation is so very key to the experience on television. Now, on the ground, it looks like a pretty tough experience. I mean, there's not like the natural amphitheaters. There's not natural viewing spots. And it doesn't look like the most fun tournament in the world to go to. Could be wrong. I'd love to go to it and see it someday. But when you've got that much real estate out there to cover and there's that much width, it maybe not necessarily sets up the best for tournament golf.
I want to give a couple of quick shout outs to just people. First of all, I'm not the biggest fan in the world, but Scott Piercy going bogey free. First person to do that in like literally 10 years. That's wild. Matt Every, who's kind of been in the wilderness for a while. Cool to see him finding some form. And I want to give a shout out to Neil's the number one overall pick in the FedEx Cup, Roberto Castro, who got beat by Tony Romo this week. So shout out to Team Neil on that one. And yeah, we're on to Bethpage.
And Sun Kang, who won the
team. And Sun Kang, yeah. And of course, you'll hear from Sun Kang's instructor, George Genkis, in the first episode of Tour Sauce.
There's
available, I don't know, soon.
Hopefully soon. All right. I don't really have, we don't have a voicemail related to this one, and I honestly didn't get to watch much of it. I was traveling this weekend, but the British Masters looked awesome. Hillside really showed out on television. Eddie Pepperell made a nice run at it. It was we had a lot of messages that were from people that were like, well, we got the U.S. feed today and I watched the British Masters this morning and now we're watching the U.S. and I thought you guys were just like just talking about things for no real reason, or I forget what the guy the British phrase, I thought you guys were making a meal out of the coverage, which I have no idea what that means, but he's like, I finally see what you guys are talking about in the viewing experience. So but shout out to Tommy Fleetwood, and he was hosting the British Masters this past week at Hillside, really cool Lynx golf course in Northwest England, and I wish I could have seen more of it, but that looked like an awesome tournament.
Yeah, it's a cool story with that event too, another one that kind of could have gone away and didn't have a sponsor for a long time, and you know, player, I think Rose hosted it last year, I believe, and Fleetwood hosting it this year, kind of breathing some more life into it and stuff. It's a cool story.
Yeah, Walton Heath last year and Hillside this past year has been it's really cool to see some of the British Masters, and like the Irish Open is going to La Hinch this year. Yeah. Some of the tournaments, the course that these tournaments are going to.
Scottish at Renaissance should be cool.
Yeah, it's really exciting. So
it's cool to see, you know, in the British Isles there, just how many courses that most people haven't heard of and how good they are. Like Hillside was one, even coming into this week, that I'm like, dude, I don't know anything about that place. And looking at pictures of it and watching a little bit of the coverage and stuff, it's just, there's so many good golf courses over there.
We've got to do a lot of tourist off seasons over there. A quick break here to talk about Callaway's promotion that is currently going on from now through May 31st. You only have a couple weeks left. They're going to donate $4 from every dozen ERC soft yellow golf balls that they sell to the Children's Miracle Network hospitals. That's right. Every time you buy a box of ERC soft yellow, it directly benefits Children's Miracle Network hospitals, a nonprofit organization that raises funds for children's hospitals as part of the industry-wide Play Yellow campaign. So be sure to pick up your ERC soft yellow golf balls with Triple Track technology in stores or online at CallawayGolf.com. Help support an amazing program. Again, that's CallawayGolf.com. Let's get back to some listener voicemails.
What up, guys? First time, long time, Tim in Atlanta. How many times are we going to have PGA Championship being moved to May? How great it is for the tournament champions mentioned this weekend? Take my call offline, hang up and listen. Have a good one. Cheers.
Tim feeling very apathetic, which I like.
Yeah, I couldn't even really make out of his question.
I think he was saying, how many times are we going to hear how great it is that the tournament was moved to May?
Oh, okay.
A la the players moving to March.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's just so great. It's so great for everyone involved. In reality,
it seems
though,
very similar, right? Like, yeah, doesn't it just limit the number of golf courses they can go to?
You would think, but this is like really stretching the limits. Kind of like Northeast in mid-May is about as far north or in a wet climate that you would want to take it in. I mean, it rains every year at PGA in August. No matter where you are in the U.S., it kind of rains in August, and it's stupid hot and humid. So I'm in favor of this. I think the players would be too. The weather looks like they're going
to
get.
Now we can go to Memphis in August.
Yeah. It looks like they're going to get. The weather's going to actually cooperate really well. It's going to be crisp. We're going to see some very crispy Tiger sweaters this week, I have a feeling.
Cold weather golf gear is the best.
And you know Tiger's not wearing that Nike sweater that's way oversized like Tommy Fleetwood is swimming in. But no, I think it is great, but I agree. It's going to be something that's going to get hammered into the ground a little bit.
Well, you guys were just up at, so just kind of speaking of the courses that may get limited, you were just up at Hazeltine. How did it look up there?
It was pretty ready to go. I mean, the greens aren't fully up to speed yet, but they'll have the KPMG Women's PGA next month, just after the Men's U.S. Open. And I mean, it had come out of spring better than I would have thought it would have. I mean, I think it's been a little wetter up in the Northeast than it has in the North Midwest, I guess you could say. So I don't think it's necessarily apples to apples. Everyone's been up in New York has been complaining about the rain, and I know it's wet here today on Monday up there, but I think the golf course should drain pretty well. I'm not an expert on agronomy in the Northeast, but from what I gathered, I think that the course is in better shape than people were expecting it to be in considering the spring and considering the winter they had. So I think it's going to be mostly a non-factor, the weather and the time of year.
I think the move to May, the PGA obviously is of the four majors. It's hard to say, I guess, any of them really like goes under the radar, but that one surely goes the most under the radar. I almost kind of think it goes more under the radar second than it did fourth.
Oh, I totally agree.
You know, like I think everyone was like, oh, this is going to be huge. It's going to move it up in the year. I'm kind of like, I don't know. Oh shit. Yeah. I guess that's this week. I don't know. Let's get to Pebble. Like what's the US Open?
or as they say in Pontevedra, the fifth major is still held in May.
There you go. Zing bang. let's do a little word association here. When I say Bethpage, what comes to mind for you guys?
Black.
Okay. Interesting.
Overwhelming excitement from New Yorkers about this place.
That's fair. Are you looking at me like I had? I was just asking the question. I was going to say like brawny, I think. It's just, it's big. You know, it's like, you guys have never been there? Is that right?
I've never been there.
Theoretically,
I've never been. Tell us all about it.
No, theoretically, I have been there like two or three times. But all I remember really is like the 18th hole. It's crazy. And I don't know if that's an indictment of me. I don't know if that's an indictment of what is kind of like a sort of repeatable golf course. I always get nervous to say anything sacrilegious about this place because people ride for it so hard. But I think that there's a bit of like New York syndrome that goes on with this place that you know, because it's in New York and because New Yorkers don't have that much good public golf that they can go play, this place seems like an absolute mecca in the world of golf. And I don't know. I didn't totally get that impression. But
however,
going back to our previous conversation, I think it's going to be a great tournament golf course for all the reasons that we mentioned earlier.
And I think it is cool that you can line up and at whatever hour of the day and play it. There is that element to it that is, we're not mocking that at all.
Like, no, not at all. And cool. Shout out to our guy AJ Volpel at Callaway. Just did a little mini documentary about that very experience on Callaway's YouTube channel. You can go watch that if you're so inclined. And it is one of those things that, like, that's what I've always wanted to do is the whole check in, get the numbered bracelet or whatever, and, you know, meet people in the parking lot. And has a very St. Andrews feel to it, obviously. But yeah, the golf course just seems like it seems big and hard, and like I'd go shoot a million. And yeah, I don't know that I'd remember that many of the holes.
But for that reason you just said, I feel like it's going to be a really great PGA Championship course, and it has been a good major venue in the past. And yeah. I think, like, you know, it's long. It's about 7,500 yards, which, you know, isn't that long by PGA Tour standards, as crazy as that sounds. But like,
it's a lot longer in May
in the crispish, the crispish like spring air. That's long, and it's way more narrow than it originally was, which makes like the bunkering look a bit funky because the bunkers are kind of too far into the rough or out of the fairway or out of the intended line of play. The par fours are meaty. I think they average about 460 yards. But this formula worked at Belrive last year and has worked in PGA Championships in the past. And I think it is for this tournament that is, you know, as much as we had gave Belrive a hard time and it was uninspiring, it was a pretty good tournament course. It helped a lot that it was kind of saved by Tiger. I think a lot of people looking at it, if Tiger's not involved, people are like, man, that was the most boring PGA ever. Brooks Koepka marched to victory and nothing happened. But I don't know. I think it should be good, kind of a bunch leaderboard is kind of what this setup will give you, and it's going to favor the Bombers. And you look at the odds, like the top four guys on the odds sheet are Tiger, DJ, Koepka, Rory, and then Randy's boy is up there, JT's up there, Rom, Rose. I mean, it's the familiar names. I mean, it's you know, kind of a cutoff. I think this is an event that kind of cuts off some of the not as long players. It's not a Jordan Spieth golf course.
No, I feel like we've said that a couple times over the last couple major preview podcasts. Like, there just haven't been that many, you know, like quote unquote faker winners at majors for the last like 10 years. It's been kind of,
it's nuts.
Well, 5 years. I don't know. It's been kind of crazy, but yeah, this feels like that kind of golf course too, where it's like, dude, saw Martin Trainer at 1,000-1. I'm not sure that he's going to, this isn't his week. I don't think.
It's not.
We'll see. I don't know. God, I've had a bad record of predicting who's not going to win, but I'll go on record on that one.
Not going to be great for the club pros.
It's going to be a tough scene for the club pros. That. Yeah, absolutely.
So we do have some odds pulled up here. Tiger is the favorite, 10-1, tied with DJ and Koepka. Rory's 12-1. I don't know why he would be behind those top three there. It doesn't really add up to me.
What site did you pull these from? These seem a little sketchy.
I think I got them from Jeff Sherman, Golf Odds on Twitter. Ricky 16-1, JT 18-1, Rahm and Rose also 18-1, J-Day 20-1, Francesco Molinari 25, Fleetwood and Schauffele right there with him, Finau at 30, kind of like that, DeChambeau 30, Spieth 40, Cantlay 40, Matsuyama 50.
Man, when was the last time Spieth was 40-1 at a major?
It seems
that's not good.
Still a risky yeah, bet at that.
Yeah, there's some strange ones there. I don't know that I'd put Ricky ahead of JT. That seems a little peculiar to me. Rory as the fourth favorite seems strange.
He's dead.
Well, many people are saying he could possibly be dead.
If he doesn't win this, is he dead?
Oh, you said he's...
No,
he's got a major... at some point this year.
Yeah. Not looking good, though, after Augusta.
Tough scene.
Tough scene.
I think, yeah, we can all be prepared for everybody to be pissed off about the television coverage. Doesn't come on until 1 o'clock on Thursday. Let's just get our anger out now. I'm saying this out loud so I don't get upset on Thursday. Now, here's the deal. Tiger tees off at 8:24 on Thursday morning. Unless everyone involved is somehow even more incompetent than we thought, I gotta believe he's feature group one that starts at 8:30.
I would think so.
I haven't seen that release yet, but
I bet they thought of that.
I think it's full green light to just gas the place if he's not the feature group one. So there will be online coverage at PGA.
What is he won, like five PGAs?
I think he's only won four. Yeah,
I gotta think they're gonna reward him with giving him a feature group spot.
I would think so. They paired him with Koepka and Molinari, so I would imagine so. So when it does come on TV, it will be on TNT on Thursday and Friday, starting at 1 to 7. It's going to be a CBS production, so the production is going to look quite familiar to all of us.
Is TNT the ones that know drama?
That's correct. Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. And then it comes on TNT in the mornings on Saturday and Sunday, and then goes over to CBS. So there's a lot of coverage of it.
It should be like the NCAA tournament, where it's not across like eight different networks. And you got to search for like True TV and all that weird stuff. That's how golf feels to me every week. So I think just keeping in that spirit would be nice.
But I like the PGA.com. It's a good experience. I feel like, and we'll see if I think there were some streaming issues last year, but hopefully it works, and we'll be able to watch the Big Cat on Thursday morning anyway. So, looking down the odds sheet, I know we're kind of partial to some of these guys. Some names that really stuck out to me. Eddie Pepperell is 150-1 to win the PGA. He had a great showing at the Players this year and just had
finished second yesterday
at the British Masters.
That's cool.
That seems like a worth a flyer. And again, partial to some of these guys. Julian Suri's 200-1. And then Kiritek Abibanrat, 250-1. I know he just came back from a knee injury, but he had a great showing this past week at Byron Nelson. So
yeah.
Those are some guys, if you're looking to take a flyer on something, those are the ones that stuck out to me.
Can I say one that stuck out to me?
Sure.
And of course I'm partial.
Sure.
But Mickelson's at 70-1.
Wow.
He's been runner up at you know, both US Opens at Bethpage. He loves the New York people.
And the New York people love him.
And of course the New York people love him. I don't know how much gas is left in that tank necessarily, but I mean, come on, that's pretty good value.
I'm psyched for the essays. I love the Golf Channel essays about where they wax poetic about Long Island. I'm psyched for that. That's always a good part of this week.
Spieth, career Grand Slam. Should we talk about that?
I mean, a Spieth question coming a little later.
Okay. I'll holster it.
It doesn't seem like a real thing that is a possibility this week that he's going for the career Grand Slam.
Yeah, that's a weird sentence right now.
All right. Let's move on.
Hi, this is Mo from Hoboken. With the PGA reshuffling the schedule and the PGA Championship now in May, those unsung heroes, PGA professionals that try to qualify, have had to fight the worst conditions of the season. I want to know what his thoughts are on that, and if big Omar Uresti is making the field this month.
Mo from Hoboken.
Mo, you need to call more.
I like that. I like that vibe. Unsung heroes, maybe a little strong for the club pros. No one loves the club pros more than me, but... yeah, so they had their what is it, the PGA Professional National Championship, I believe, was a couple weeks ago. So, Mo, to answer your question, no, I don't think that the cold weather PGA Pro struggled, because I think the number I saw was 5 of the 20 that made it are actually from the Met PGA section. So there's a bunch of guys from like Westchester and Lake Success and stuff like that are kind of right outside NC. So there's gonna be a strong PGA Pro contingent up at the PGA Championship this year. And also your second question, Omar Uresti not in the field. He finished T59.
Any notables that he got beat by?
I want to give a shout to Joanna Coe, who finished. There were four women in the PGA Professional National Championship. Where there's like 300 people or something in this tournament. At least it looks like. I don't know. The stream or the scoreboard online is shitty. You can only see like four names at a time.
They used to televise it.
They did.
I can remember watching it on Golf Channel.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, this lady, Joanna Coe, not only made the cut, she finished 51st. So that's pretty cool. She's going to be playing in the KPMG LPGA Championship.
KPMG Women's PGA.
There it is. Also, people get upset about Omar Uresti. I wouldn't mind them turning the guns this week on Craig Bowden, who qualified through the PGA section or whatever I said, PGA Professional National Championship. This guy had his PGA Tour card 5 times.
Oh, no.
Won 3 times on the web.com tour. Was a touring pro for, I don't know, like 15 years. And now he's beating up these club pros to get into the PGA Championship. Seems a little scummy. If anyone has any more info on that, let me know. Maybe he's running the first tee of Evansville, Indiana or something, but and growing the game. And if so, I apologize. But it seems a little suspect at best.
The only thing I want to add is, anecdotally, knowing a few club pros in my day, all the ones I know don't really like playing golf, which I think is the best vibe.
Well, I think that's why like club pro guy resonates with so many people. Is it like it's so spot on? Like, he's obviously a great writer. And it's super funny, but yeah, the reason it's so good is because it's so true, I think.
Yeah, if you are out at the PGA Championship this week and you do see a club pro out there, be sure to tell them about your most recent round, kind of shot by shot, with as much detail as you can, because they love that. That's the best.
83, man, with 2 triples out there.
I just couldn't make any putts.
Who set the pin on 6 today?
I couldn't tell you how hard I perked up when I said, I wouldn't mind if people pointed their guns in this guy's direction. Well, a very Tron move of you.
Well, yeah, Tron's not here. We're trying to keep accountability here. There's no free rides.
All right. I think we got another couple more PGA ones.
This is Mike calling you from Wyoming. Big fan. First time caller. Just wondering, who's going to have a better finish at the PGA Championship? Eldrick, Tiger Woods, or our friend Bruce, also pronounced as Brooks Koepka. Thanks.
Wyoming. We might need to strap to Wyoming. I didn't know we had listeners in Wyoming. That's
I would
great.
Love to do one.
Would watch. I wanted to include this one just to make triple sure that we mentioned Brooks Koepka on this preview pod. I don't want to get lumped in the group. Yep. That never pays him any attention.
This is us respecting him.
This is out of pure respect. This does seem like a very Brooks Koepka tournament this week.
100%.
Maybe because he also won the most recent PGA Championship.
Yeah, maybe because he's won like 3 out of 8 or 3 out of 7 or whatever.
And just really good at golf. I actually really enjoyed watching him play at Trinity Forest this past week, because it was kind of interesting to see some of the shorter hitters kind of plot their way around it and him just bash driver pretty much as hard as he could swing on every hole. But no, this sets up great for him. I mean, I think it'd be a great win if we got a Koepka Tiger showdown. I know that they're kind of forcing it on us, pairing them together in that pairing in the first round. But it's going to be interesting to watch the 3 different playing styles of those 3 guys, him, Molinari, and Koepka, all playing together.
This might be a stupid question, but like all betting and everything aside, like Koepka is the favorite, right? If you had to say, like, who's the favorite?
Koepka.
How would it not be Koepka, right?
He's for sure going to win.
I would have said Rory. Like, if I had to bet on somebody to win this week, if I life or death, I think Rory is probably the best
bet. Over Koepka?
Yeah, man.
Life or death is an interesting way to phrase that.
I don't know. Here we go. I just disrespected Koepka.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to give him a
Brooks,
nod
if you're listening to this, me and Randy are big fans. Please don't Instagram about us. Don't do anything like that. We're respecting you.
But we're not even talking about DJ. I mean, why wouldn't he be one of the first names listed?
John's not here. DJ low key is falling into the Rory territory for me.
That's interesting.
Continue.
Like I've said it before, but if he wants to be this good, like, he needs to win more.
I think you said that if he's the greatest player of all time, as Tron mentions, then he's also the most overrated player of all time.
Exactly. He's got one.
Or the
major.
Most underwhelming. Yeah. Or under. Yeah. Accomplished.
I mean,
or whatever.
He and Sean
the word
McKeel have the
for.
Same amount of majors.
Wow.
You guys. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying.
It would be a good time for him to start, plucking a major here or there.
He's had way too many chances to have only had one. That we can all agree on.
Listen, we all agree.
Yeah. It's also very hard to win them, but yes.
Hey, fellas, how we doing? Ryan calling in from Pittsburgh. Just think it's time to sound some major alarm bells for one Jordan Spieth. Sitting here watching the AT&T Byron Nelson, he just finished up sitting T29, and it occurred to me that there isn't anything even remotely redeemable about this guy's golf game right now, and it's been that way for the better part of the past year. We're now approaching 2 years that he has last won, which was the 2017 British Open presented by Your Majesty.
Of course.
And furthermore, last top five was last year's Masters. Personally, I'm just a little fed up about hearing Tron week after week say that Jordan Spieth is in the lab. It's possible that Tron's referencing Elizabeth Holmes, as in there is a fraudulent product currently on the marketplace. That's my take. Deal with it. Crack on.
Usually, wow, great call.
Usually we support the people that get in and get out.
Yeah.
But that was well.
No, he clearly had written out some bullet points. He had a very like a full on 5-paragraph persuasive essay written out.
I agree and I disagree.
Do we think Spieth has been posting up in the Edison machines trying to get it back?
I know he's working really hard at it. I believe that.
Possible blood spinning going on?
I think the messaging on the outside would lead you to believe that they're closer to having this goal realized.
He's raised his Series C funding already.
I think we rang the alarm bells on Spieth a long time ago, though. So I think in that regard, I think it's not time to ring the alarm bells. They've been ringing. It's whether or not
But they've been ringing softly, and they've been a lot of like, you know, it's not great, but I think he's close. Well, he's close. He's well, close.
And you're gonna like my next point.
Okay, go. Yeah, sorry, I cut you off. Why don't you continue? Right.
Listen, you just noted here, Mr. Caller, I forget your name, but his T29 at the Byron this past week, third best result of the season. He's trending.
He's trending.
He's trending.
Nothing is like high school debate club going on.
Nothing remotely redeemable about his golf game. Hey, he's 28th in putting this year on tour. A lot of people think he can't find the hole. Not true. Now,
where is he in scoring average?
His birdie average, 18th on tour. He's still making a ton of birdies. He's just throwing them back with a ton of bogeys and doubles. He's 202nd in strokes gained off the tee. And this is the most alarming stat to me. As much as we make fun of the FedEx Cup, he's 150th. Like, he is not in the playoffs as of right now. We are not early in the season. We are more than halfway through the season, and he's 150th.
That's wild.
And he has played plenty of events.
What's the guaranteed money stuff he has left? I guess he's got the majors, which not everybody gets in, which are more points. He's got the Memphis WGC, which is guaranteed points. Is that it? And then it's just, after that, it's like make cuts?
I don't even think you guarantee. Like, I think there's a cutoff of points at a certain amount at those events. But
the WGCs?
I think so.
I don't know. We'll get back to you guys on that.
There's guaranteed money, but not all points. I could be wrong.
Oh, you might be right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not good. Let's be honest. And this, I don't think this golf course sets up well for him. And I think we kind of, at least I myself, tried to talk myself into him at the Masters because that golf course obviously does set up well for him. And, you know, his kind of play leading up into it, I thought maybe.
You still think he might win the Masters.
He might
win the 2019 Masters.
If
a couple of things go his way.
If 20 guys, it turns out, sign the wrong cards, like, he might still do it. But, you know, I could kind of explain away the play leading up to the Masters, or at least attempt to, and thinking that he might do it. A lot of people laughed at that, and maybe it was justified. But leading up to this week, I think at 40-1, I think that's even too low of odds. Too high of odds? I don't know how you...
Well, that's good. Maybe it'll be a reverse psychology thing. Maybe it'll click this week.
Maybe. You want to bet on that?
No, I don't.
You guys kill me. Like, what? So this call, right? We're sounding major alarm bells for Spieth, and he won the British Open in 2017. Last year's major results, he finished third at the Masters. He missed a cut at the U.S. Open, and then he finished tied for 9th at the British Open, tied for 12th. He was tied for 21st at the Masters. Like, guys, go look at what Rory and Dustin have done. Like, why, if we're sounding major alarm bells for Spieth, it's because he's obviously so much better than those guys.
Whoa.
Well, I mean, those other guys are at least performing on a week-to-week basis. Like, you know, Jordan's just kind of...
But I would argue, I don't care about that.
I know, but like...
Randy's a just-win, baby kind of guy.
Like, the only thing that matters, and we've talked about this, like, truly of significance, the only thing that matters is majors. I get your point. DJ, Rory, very consistent, good PGA Tour results, yada, yada, yada. But if we're judging Spieth based on majors, then... And sounding alarm bells, and we need to sound it for a ton of top players.
Do you have like Rory and DJ's results handy?
I do. So, you know, Dustin won the U.S. Open in 2016. Since then, he's missed three cuts in majors. You know, he's got a tie.
Quietly missed three cuts in majors.
He's got a tie for 9th at the 2016 British Open. Didn't get a top 10 in 2017. Finished T10 in 2018. Third at the 2018 U.S. Open. and then, you know, really nothing since then. And also, you know, Rory's had some good Masters results on paper. You know, I think everybody expects more out of him, so it's tough to judge. And he's had some really good British Opens, but he's missed three straight cuts at the U.S. Open. PGA Championship's been a horror show for him. And, you know, he hasn't won a major since 2014.
Listen, I agree.
So my only point is, and I'm not like accusing you guys, but it's like we hear voicemails like this, and it's like I just feel like Spieth is judged on a much harder curve right now.
I think that maybe some of it can be, I think some of Spieth's results that you're mentioning, if I'm remembering right, some of those higher finishes over the last two or three years have been pretty backdoor-y, whereas I think Rory's and DJ's have been a little fadeaway-y. So at least it seems like they're...
Well, the Masters, you know what I mean? Like, of course, has been fadeaway for Spieth, though.
That's true.
Yeah. I think it points to everybody still... I think we're having this discussion because I think everybody recognizes deep down, like, Spieth is the best player on tour.
Whoa.
Right now. Like, his potential, right? Because, how old is Spieth? Do you know how old he is? Without looking.
25. We just had him on the podcast.
He's 25. That's nuts.
It is.
I think he's like the most underrated dude out there.
But at the same time, like, that's what Rory's age was when he won his last major. So it's like, we can't assume that Spieth is going to win a major in the next 5 years. And you, how much would you have bet on Rory to win a major in the last 5 years? We all would have bet a lot.
A lot.
It hasn't happened.
We lose a lot of money gambling.
We are not good gamblers, right, for the record. I think Spieth is, his golf that he played, and he talked about this in the pod, his golf he played in 2017 was even better than 2015. A lot of people don't realize that, but it was like the best tee to green, complete golf that he's ever played. I don't think it's the best we've seen in recent years, but he's just held back. As much as I think he hits the ball far enough, he isn't able to take advantage of distance. And that's what makes these top, like Rory, DJ, Koepka guys stand out to me as being better players overall, is they have this like skill that doesn't really go away. I mean, accuracy kind of goes away a little bit at times, but like they can still hit it far and get it close to the green and figure it out from there. When Spieth's driver doesn't behave, he doesn't have enough other skills to make up for it, like completely enough to make up for it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, his results in majors have been good, but man, we need to see him playing good golf, and he has done that. Like he has played like that 2017 season I'm referring to. Like he was second overall in strokes gained tee to green. Like he was the best ball, one of the best ball strikers in the world, and that has completely left him. And it's not the putting that people are concerned about. And you cannot fake it around these major championship venues when you're not striking the ball well.
Well, I guess my only pushback would be if we accept that he's just not striking the ball well, is I would say he is kind of faking it at a high level, because he and Rory both finished tied for 21 at the Masters this year. And what did Dustin? He was tied for second. God, Dustin Johnson was tied for second in the Masters. I guess I was napping. I don't know. I just, it's interesting. The Spieth. If he puts it together, he's gonna just blow people away. I think. I think.
I hope so. He's my favorite player to watch.
I mean, yeah, I would be rooting hardcore for this. I'm not waving the flag as, he looked me in the eye and he told me he was back.
Right.
And I fell for it.
I'm not saying he's back necessarily right now. I'm just saying, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. I guess he gets graded on such a severe curve. And I think that's an implicit or explicit recognition of, like, he's insanely talented.
Well, I kind of think the only person who doesn't, that we're talking about, that doesn't get graded on that incredibly difficult curve is DJ.
Well, yes, which is my
which I agree with you. Well, because I think Rory gets graded on that too.
I agree that he gets graded on a different curve. Yet I also agree, two things can be true there. He gets graded on a tougher curve, and also his golf has been really bad by his standard, like by any measure of his standard. Like it's this far into the season, there's no reason he should be this far down in the FedEx Cup, and we should have seen more signs of life in the last 1.5 years than there really have been. So.
Yeah, I agree. I think what you're saying is he's band-aiding it together, and his worst is looking like a lot of other people's average.
His worst looks like, I don't know, inseparable from some pretty recognizable names.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
It's interesting.
It is really interesting too that we're. Yeah, it's just hard. We've talked about this a lot too. I think Justin Rose is kind of the poster child for this, but it's like when Justin Rose misses a cut, nobody cares.
Exactly.
You know, and it's
just
like,
not a big deal.
Which he, honestly, I haven't checked today. He might very well be the number one player in the world. I have no idea, candidly. JT might be number one in the world. Dustin might be number one in the world. Brooks might be number one in the world. I don't know.
Who JT's another guy. You know, he's...
DJ's the number one player in the world right now.
Sure.
Rose is number two.
Sure.
You know... JT has won top 10 since winning the PGA in 2017 in majors.
Who's another guy that if he misses a cut, people are going, yeah, all right, whatever.
It's okay.
Which this is one where if we're really...
Like Rahm. I've never gotten like Rahm. Right. You know, it's like...
But Rahm's not a three-time major winner, so that's a reason true. Why yeah. Spieth gets great on this curve yeah. is like he's, you know, again, he gets compared to his previous successes. And I think I even said this to him when we did the pod. I said... Maybe I didn't say it in these words, but I think he outperformed his skill set in the beginning. I think the results spoke so highly of what his skill is. Yeah. And like he's obviously an incredible player, but like, God, for him to have three majors at that young age is a better projection than anyone could have had looking at like his TrackMan numbers coming out of right. college or something like that. So
he's got a certain it about Spieth, which I think is what excited everybody. And I think, you know, maybe why everybody's so disappointed, because in a post-Tiger world, majors are the only thing. And I think he was somebody that, along with Rory, and I think quite honestly that's what's been so disappointing about Rory over the last 5 years, especially for me, is like you're just looking for these guys to really jump into a situation where it's like, at least we can dream on them being like the next big thing.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It's almost like, I think there's something to be said for that where, you know, it's almost like admitting that Spieth might not be as good as we thought he was, kind of you're giving up on a bit of a dream a little bit. Because when watching him in 2015, you know, when he would win, and I'm not going back to the putting stats or anything like that, but when you would watch him down the stretch, he would just make, he did it at Chambers Bay, he did it at St. Andrews, even though he didn't win there. But, you know, he's just making these long putts that shouldn't go in, and yes. for some reason they just happen to go in. It's like the only other person that does that is Tiger.
I was getting ready to say the exact same thing. It's like no one's given us better moments than Spieth,
totally,
other than Tiger.
And Rory's never done that.
I totally
in majors
agree.
And Dustin's never. Brooks kind of actually does that, except for he's like it would almost turn into this like disappointing thing. Like right. I picture him at Erin Hills where it's like, all right, well, he's got to miss this one, and he just didn't, which is cool in its own way. But yeah, Spieth is the only guy that you're it makes it feel almost fake. Like it makes it feel a lot bigger than one major or whatever.
Yeah, he felt generational.
Yeah.
Or he could be generational. And that's where I like he's still young enough, and you know, maybe he's not Tiger. He could certainly be Tom Watson though. He could be Mr. Watson. So yeah, I continue to root for him. I do think he has that sense of there've been too many moments where it's just like there's that it factor with him.
Just thinking, what you mentioned, St. Andrews, that putt on 16 that he made, the run that he made at the Masters last year against Reed, I think of, and like the go get that moment that happened at Birkdale and that vaporizing run he went on to close that. I mean.
17 at Chambers Bay.
I think it's part of him being like the American kind of sweetheart is what yeah. kind of glorifies some of that a little bit and makes us maybe believe a little stronger. We're not yeah. giving up on him. I think he's not ready right now. I think
I would say it's chicken and the egg though, because I think he is the American sweetheart because of
yes.
his, you know, I think it goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's crazy. Good discussion.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy that he and Koepka have the same amount of majors and how differently they
God,
do
that's
get treated.
So true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if Koepka misses the cut this week, it's going to be like, oh, wow, that's surprising. But and if Spieth misses, it's like,
what's wrong?
Where does Jordan Spieth go next?
Yeah,
where does he go
exactly.
next?
Yeah. Pebble, where he's probably going to win.
We'll do it all over again.
All right. Let's move on.
All right. Wrapping a few more.
Hey, boys. John here from San Francisco. Long time, first time. Headed to Bethpage on Friday. What, in your opinion, is the best way to watch a golf tournament in person? Sometimes I feel like I get kind of stuck in between release patterns, between following a group or sitting at a green. Would love to hear your guys' take. Thanks.
I feel your pain.
Definitely. Yeah, that's an important question.
I think the answer would be like, I would say watch it on TV, but that usually results in Big Randy taking a nap. So,
my favorite thing to do, it's not even close, is pick a group at the beginning of the day and follow them for all 18 holes and just watch them absolutely like build around. I know we say that a ton on this podcast, but that's as fun as it gets for me. And pick someone that you really like, someone that you really want to root for, or someone that you hate watching, and just go watch them like grind it out, because there's so much more of a sense of importance when you're watching every putt, you know what I mean? And you can feel the momentum, positive and negative. It's the best.
Yeah, I don't think you go to a tournament to watch the tournament. I think you have to go in with a mindset to just go watch golf, and you can do that. You know, maybe you go to the driving range and just watch guys hit various shots. Maybe you post up at a cool venue where you can, you know, see some wedges into a green and then, you know, watch them hit driver or something. But I'll echo what you say. I like to go find a guy who, and sometimes it can be people you know nothing about. That can be fun.
Yeah.
You know, the smaller the gallery, the better. And just go follow them for the whole round. Ideally, early in the morning, you get to see the whole course. You get to, like you say, you get to see the round being built, and then you get to go home. And if you want to watch the actual tournament, it's on TV.
For a major, I don't necessarily love the idea of going out and following kind of a known. Like I think, like a, you know, I go to the Memorial every year and love to pick out a group in the morning and at 8 a.m. and just follow them. I love that. You learn so much more of like, whoa, these guys hit some squirrely shots. Yeah, it's yeah, not exactly like this stripe show, you know, hole after hole, which I think is really valuable. One, it is kind of demoralizing in that, God, if those guys hit those kind of shots, like, what kind of hope do we have?
You just get so pissed at where they make par from.
Yes. Well, that's the thing.
They always make par.
They do hit tee shots that look like ours sometimes, but it's also them hitting the next shot, yeah, which is a exactly much better recovery than we're able to do. I think just kind of getting an understanding of what you actually want to see. Like for us, we get to see, you know, tour players a lot, so it's not that interesting to see them in person. But I remember, you know, as a kid and growing up, and I would see one tournament a year, like laying eyes on Tiger Woods was kind of like, yeah, whoa,
totally,
like this is in the flesh. And like that is a thing that, you know, matters to a lot of people. So going to the range, going to the practice range and practice green and just seeing people come by, I think is kind of a cool experience. Now, for a major, I think you go to a major to be a part of like the major atmosphere. So I would find actually a big crowded hole, get a good spot at it, and watch a lot of groups come through. And like I remember watching, you know, obviously Tiger at Bellerive was one of a kind of atmosphere and whatnot. But watching like when he stuffed at that third hole and hearing that crowd noise, yeah, I was like, whoa, I wish I was there for that scream right there. So that's not something you can necessarily dial up. I do not recommend following Tiger under any circumstances, but just kind of finding a hole that's a cool environment that maybe has a Jumbotron. I don't know if they'll have any of those at the PGA or anything like that, but where you can still watch some golf, see what's going on, and be a part of the atmosphere. But don't try to do everything. You can't see and do everything. Have a plan, but just have some goals. Maybe check those goals off early off in the day, and then just go have fun. Like the whole point of being there is have fun.
Yeah, I think it's picking what's most important to you, as cheesy as that sounds. I mean, if it's like you said, if it's seeing big names, then go do that. If it's like the tournament I've probably been to the most is the Players Championship here in Jacksonville. And so I've had days where I've sat on 17 with two friends and you each pick someone in the threesome and you gamble on who's going to hit it closest and you do that for 5 straight hours. That's so much fun. I've had days where you just sit right behind 16 tee and you just see, like, I always like seeing like different lines that guys take. So if it's a dog leg where they're cutting the dog leg, I like seeing, you know, how Brooks's line, like I remember, I think Sally, you and I were there maybe, or maybe it was me and Tron, but seeing Brooks play 16 at Sawgrass, the line that he took over that tree on the left compared to everybody else was just like, it like made my whole day seeing that. It's insane. Or I've had days where I just sit and watch guys on the chipping green. Like you said, like watching Alex Noren legitimately cut chips was awesome. And so like, that's something that's always stuck with me. So yeah, I don't know. Just pick out what's most important. If it's the architecture, go do that. If it's seeing big names, go do that. And yeah, have fun.
Tees and greens, it's not fairways. Yeah. Fairways are bad spots to be. I love tees. You can get right behind guys on a lot of tournaments, incredibly close, and hear and feel the impact. That is really cool. And greens, there's just a lot more. A lot of time is spent on the greens, so you get to kind of watch them for longer than you would when they just kind of come and go from tee boxes.
When I'm on the tee, I know it's not going to, but I'm always nervous my cell phone's going to go off.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
Always. I'm terrified of it. Like some Siri thing is going to be triggered or something. And yeah, I always get nervous about that.
Can I do a quick shout out? The best in-person viewing experience is the U.S. Open qualifiers. So especially for people who live around Columbus, you know, go the Monday after the Memorial Tournament. There are no ropes. I walked down the damn fairway and just like stood like
they let me carry a bag last year.
I was like throwing divots to caddies. You know, you stand like 20 yards off these guys hitting every shot. It was incredible.
Hey, tall guy, how's the wind up there?
Yeah. I was gonna like offer to carry DJ Trahan's bag, but so obviously if you're near Columbus, God, get out there. Find the qualifying, but you know some PGA pros and certainly names you've heard of pop up at other sites. So if you live near a sectional U.S. qualifying site, I would say go out there and just watch and watch people build rounds. It's a lot of fun.
I caddied for Curtis last year in the U.S. Open qualifier, and Brian Gay was in our group. And for like six holes in, Curtis is already checked out. Like, first of all, he's from Australia and lives in Florida. He had like never seen bluegrass rough before, and he couldn't chip out of it. Anyways, he's getting dusted. He smokes a drive on the seventh hole. I think we honestly had wedge in, and Brian Gay is comically far behind us and hit driver. And Curtis is not the longest hitter on tour by any means, but Brian Gay is so far back. I legitimately think he probably had like 4 iron into this relatively short par four. Hits this 4 iron, and Curtis is narrating the shot as he's already checked out of the round. He's narrating it as if he's Brian Gay, and he's like, "Oh, look at these suckers. I'm so much better than all of these suckers." Sure enough, he hits a 4 iron to like 15 feet and made birdie, and we shot like 77, and we didn't sign our card. It was fun though.
Well, Brian Gay was one of like Tron and I watched him for 18 holes at the Players either this year or a couple years ago, and like it's just wild. Like that's what I mean by watching someone build around, where it's like he gets outdriven by 60 yards by these guys, and he just somehow you add them all up at the end of the day, and it's like, dude, Brian Gay beat you by two.
Yeah.
Like how did that happen? And it's just it's fun to watch those guys.
No more voicemails left. I think we do have one final topic to discuss here. Why don't you set up some golf media news was hit the radio waves sure. today.
Well, let's not make this a bigger deal than it is, but I thought it was interesting seeing the Discovery. I don't really know the dividing line between Discovery and Golf TV and the PGA Tour. I don't know if it's all just one big thing, or I don't really know what Golf TV is. But I saw that purchased Golf Digest, which is the third time Golf Digest has been purchased in its lengthy history. I don't know, just interesting. I think it's very interesting seeing a independent golf media publication being bought up by basically like the rights holders. I don't think that's good for anybody, except I guess the people at Golf Digest who, you know, will be able to keep their jobs, which is good. There's a lot of good people there as well, but I don't know. Just an interesting scenario. I'm curious what you guys think.
God, I have no thought. I want to.
You're out?
Yeah, I'm signing off. big Randy out. Well, anything I say will only, it won't be good.
Oh, it will. That's exactly why we want you to say it. Could you give us some numbers that I think you had from Jeff Shackelford's article?
Yeah,
I
think he was actually quoting one of the reports on page six. So this was, they reportedly paid $30 million for Golf Digest, which is a stark decrease from the $430 million that it was sold for in 2001.
That's wild.
I thought it was interesting that he also noted that the CEO of Discovery made $42 million last year. So they bought Golf Digest for $30 million. So I guess that kind of shows you where it's at in the portfolio. But
I don't know numbers in golf. I have no idea what we're. I know no idea, and those like blew me away when I heard that. Like an 8% value of what it was bought for.
Yeah, so I don't really know. It's a lot of like it kind of just seems like a play to be able to sell ads on Golf Digest, which I don't know, whatever that's worth. It seems like maybe some like executives come out ahead in this, and some people who work at Golf Digest come out ahead. I don't really see how any fan benefits from this at all.
That wasn't considered. Let's be honest here.
So I guess I guess the fans will get to hear from more brands, which is always fucking sweet. That's really what we're always looking for. So
Tiger was fired up about it. He made a video.
Tiger said he's what did he say? He's never been more excited about something, or I forget what the quote was. Like so comically over the top. It was like, I can't think of anything that makes me more excited than this merger or something. I don't know. The whole thing is just. It's, I don't know. It's a little gross.
Well, there are four, there were four logos in the corners of that video. Now, I do want to point out that Golf TV and PGA Tour took up the bottom right corner of it. So if you thought all four corners of the real estate were bought up, there is space in the top right corner. Discovery was in the bottom left, and then Golf Digest was in the top left. So there is some real estate up there if they wanted to go for the four-corner offense there.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
It feels like a breakdown of the Glass-Steagall Act.
If it does. Oh, Randy's ears just perked up.
What? I'm back.
That's, we should start a big thing to break up the big golf content entities.
It does seem
break
like
them up, cause some competition. This is disgusting.
I got some fiduciary concerns about whoever the CEO was at Golf Digest.
Anything else burning from this week?
Nada. Do we do picks officially or no? I mean, it's a major coming up. Are we supposed to do that?
I think we did at the beginning of the year, but I don't remember who I picked.
I hope I picked Brooks. I think it seems like it's at the top of my mind, but
I said Rory earlier, so I'll go with Rory.
All right, I'll pick Brooks.
I think Brooks is for sure going to win, but
you're taking Mickelson?
Yeah, Mickelson and Spieth, you know, my two trusty standbys. No, who I really would like to see play well is Bryson. He had a great first round at Augusta and then obviously fell off. But I guess my true heart pick would be our friend Max Homa gets to play in the PGA.
Of course. I think it might be a good setup for Max.
Yeah.
It's exciting. He's 500-1.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to legit get involved on that one then. Can we do the who won't win? I don't want to be out on this island by myself.
Who won't win? I'll say Dustin.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I think Dustin might win.
And of course, Rick. I mean, I should say, of course, Rick.
Well, yeah, Randy's willing to put two guys into the who won't win every single week that we do this.
I'm gonna just because I think it would be the most fun thing in the world if he did win. I'm gonna say the cat. I don't think the cat's going back to back.
Yeah, I'll go with you on that just because I would love to see the world burn.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not prepared for him to win back to back majors. If he wins this one, he's gonna win Pebble too
for sure.
Yeah.
If he wins back to back, honestly, like they should shut down the tour.
I sell high.
Like all these guys should be kicked off the tour. Let's start over. Like it's a joke.
All right, I think that about wraps it. Everyone enjoy PGA Championship Week. We will be doing some live shows this week, consistent with most of the other majors, and should have another podcast up Wednesday evening of this week as well, with another recognizable name that's not a golfer. So hope it actually ends up happening if I'm going to say that out loud. We're scheduled. Let's hope it happens.
Cheers.
This is where we say cheers.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!